hello, everybody. Good to hear from all you hardworking real estate pros out there. This is the Texas Real Estate Finance Podcast, and I'm your host, Mike Mills, a North Texas mortgage banker with Geneva Financial. And when I'm not here talking nonsense into the internet, my team and I help your clients find the best home loan options to fit their needs. These days, every transaction is a little more complicated and a little more challenging. So you need someone on your side to make sure that your clients reach the finish line, not just with a great affordable home loan, but with a huge smile on their face. So when they think of you, each time that they recommend someone to their friends and family when they're ready to buy or sell. We're going to be your secret weapon to keep all those valuable referrals coming your way. And speaking of referrals, your future clients are going to start asking questions that you may not have to handle, that you may not have had to handle much in the past. Because right now, our industry is kind of under attack. Realtors and lenders, believe it or not, also. These lawsuits are starting to bleed over into mortgage lenders these days, just like all you realtors out there. Commission structures are changing. Your role as a realtor in the transaction might soon be changing. And new companies are popping up all over the place that are looking to give different options on how to buy or sell a home to your clients. I want you to understand, right now, this isn't good or bad. It's just different. And the key to understand what is happening and learn how to set up your business to meet these changing demands. You have to know what's occurring in the market in order to be prepared. And I'm here to be your inside scoop to this rapidly changing real estate landscape. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I ask my weekly favor from you. If you find this podcast helpful and informative, please do me a huge favor and like, comment, share, or even drop us a review. Your participation in our weekly discussions goes a long way in continuing to build our real estate family and bring more and more insights to you each week in this incredibly critical time when so much of what we know is changing every single day. So if you can help us out with a 2-second click, I would be forever thankful. Now, today we are joined by a Harvard Business School graduate and a CEO of Austin-based True Footage, a tech property valuation platform, and he also has his hands in a few other interesting ventures as well as we go through this. But he's here today to talk about a topic he wrote about in his college thesis back in 2016, so it's been a long time, real estate commissions and NAR's role in all of this. You may or may not agree with his point of view sometimes, but either way, you cannot discount it or ignore it, especially with everything that has happened in our industry since then. So without further ado, please welcome John List to the podcast. John, how are we doing today, sir?
What's going on? It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you hopping on with us a little bit today. I know with all the craziness that's kind of been going on in our industry, which you are a big player in these days with your companies that are helping not only with property valuations, but also helping with sellers getting properties recognized. I thought it'd be a great conversation, especially because you know, you had this this entire thing that you did back in 2016 that you had no idea was going to have any kind of implications to what's occurred in our market right now. But, it, you know, it's come up. I found you, one of my former podcast guests, Lance Lambert, who publishes Resi Club, which is a great resource website for anybody out there trying to get information on the housing market in certain parts of the country. Lance is a great resource, but I found him there. He had done a short interview with you and got a few quotes on your thesis that you'd done over at the Harvard Business School. And so I wanted to kind of bring you on and chat about that. But before we get into all that, you are the founder of a company called True Footage. I want you to kind of explain what is True Footage? What do you guys do? Why you decided to come up with that? And kind of give us a little insight into to what your company does.
Awesome. So True Footage is a national appraisal technology company. So we do two things. Number one is we complete appraisals for mortgage originators across the country. Our largest market is actually Texas, and I'm based in Austin. We started in July of 2021, and we quickly grew to a couple hundred appraisers. And our platform is different because everybody works exclusively for us, as opposed to kind of a sole proprietorship model that's normal in the appraisal industry. So we have a lot more kind of ability to train and create a more consistent and reliable product. Okay. And then the second piece around True Footage is software. So we're building kind of the next gen of appraisal forms and workflows and software to provide appraisers with a much faster, easier, and more credible way to complete their analysis.
So what you, the software that you guys provide ultimately helps appraisers. It's not necessarily replacing what they do, but it gives them more data to kind of do their job more efficiently. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, definitely. I think obviously over the last couple of years, you've seen kind of the GSEs cracking down on kind of the variance in performance that they've been observing in the appraisal industry. And so this software really helps kind of build credibility into the report. So appraisers are responsible for not just making assertions about the market. Obviously, it is an opinion of value at the end of the day, but also providing kind of support and analysis to back up the credibility of their report. So we do things like help with market conditions analysis, help with adjustments in the comparables analysis, and other kind of data science tools in order to make the appraiser, you know, a lot more reliable and a lot more efficient.
Do you feel like, you know, in setting all this up and putting your company together, because like on the lending side of things, you know, obviously we have, you know, we still use appraisers that physically go to the properties and they look at them. But, you know, within the past few years, the GSEs, Fannie and Freddie, have played a much bigger role in evaluating these appraisals and scoring them. And it can be true issues when we go to files that have high scores, you know, that have high risk levels that, you know, sometimes we have to kick it out completely and we can't use it for whatever reason. And especially now these days with the market fluctuating as much as it has been, because, you know, we're coming out of a market where, I mean, we're well out of it, but buyers and sellers, you know, still live in the past sometimes, but we're coming out of a market where it was pretty easy, you know, as far as comps, because properties were moving at a pretty good clip. And now homes are sitting longer. Now people aren't listing as much. So comps are fewer and, you know, in some markets are harder to come by. And is it a comp that was 8 months ago when the market was really hot compared to what it is today? And so we run into more and more of these valuation issues, along with there being a tool that both Fannie and Freddie provide called Collateral Underwriter, that basically evaluates that particular appraisal and then provides 50 other comps that they would have used or adjusted either way. So my question is, you know, obviously we've always relied on the tried and true human being to go out and evaluate these properties, but how far are we away from, you know, some of this not even being necessary anymore because of the advent of technology, to where these properties and all the data that's recorded for them can be fairly easily evaluated without having a human being go out and look at it?
Well, there's obviously a widespread discussion on alternatives to the appraisal. Everything kind of from an automated valuation model or an AVM, you know, like the Zestimate as kind of the most prime consumer example, to a traditional appraisal product. And I think where most people shake out is there's going to be a continuum of appraisal valuation products available and a menu based on each type property type. So if it's in a subdivision in Houston, a D.R. Horton subdivision where everything looks the same and it's right, low LTV, you probably are not going to get an appraisal done on that product. But in a more complex environment with less properties that look identical, there's probably going to need to be an appraisal done almost in perpetuity. I think AVMs fail in very kind of complex or non-homogeneous marketplaces. And most cities in America, you know, have kind of a diverse housing stock. So I don't think it's a one size fits all answer, but this was certainly, you know, some of the dynamics that you're articulating is certainly kind of one of the reasons why we launched our company. Obviously, during COVID, you saw mortgage originations at an all-time high. You saw appraisal as really kind of one of these constraining bottlenecks in the whole mortgage manufacturing process because people couldn't get out to properties fast enough. You have a labor supply of people where the average age is 63. They've been doing things a certain way, you know, way for the last 20, 30 years. Some appraisers are really good at their job, others aren't. And we're going to get into that with realtors as well. I mean, you kind of see that in basically any profession.
It's normal.
And so kind of what we see is, you know, time adjustments, what you're talking about how the market was moving, appraisers weren't making those. And that was causing a lot of issues with the appraisal. And so what our kind of thesis is let's power the appraiser. They're still in the driver's seat. Let's give them technology. Let's make sure they're making those time adjustments. You know, in COVID, for example, the time adjustments were historic. Nobody had ever made a 4% per month, you know, time adjustment on an appraisal report. But that's what you had to do in order to, you know, present a rigorous analysis that was credible at the time. And so we were able to kind of provide that analysis because of kind of the rigorous, you know, data-driven approach to the software.
Well, I mean, I think that it's just like anything else. There's going to be a lane, you know, for all of these different pieces, just like there's never going to be not a need for a human being to go out and evaluate properties in certain circumstances, because like you said, markets are so diverse and so different, you know, all across the country, that you can't eliminate the need for an appraiser entirely. But there will probably be more and more where these automated approvals come through. I mean, we see them still, you know, on a fairly regular I'd say regular basis, for those that are putting down at least 20%, we'll get those appraisal waivers where we don't need an appraisal to go out and get that determined. And so I think that'll probably, you know, continue. I don't know if we'll ever get to a point, you know, I guess we'll see if someone who isn't putting down 20%, 5, 10, you know, less or the minimum, if we'll ever get waivers on those. And if not, then, you know, obviously there's always going to be a place for a physical appraiser to go out there and look at it. But it is interesting to see how, you know, with our industry as a whole, in one degree, it's difficult for technology to truly penetrate things sometimes because of the regulatory restrictions that we have in so many levels, whether it be state or federal, that it makes it a challenge sometimes for new technologies to penetrate quickly. It's a slow burn. And so, you know, but at least with what you guys are doing, it seems like it's more of a pairing of, hey, we're taking the traditional appraisal route and we're just giving you some extra tools so you can do your job a little bit more efficiently. And maybe one day we'll see, costs never come down, but maybe, you know, do it a little bit more cost effective as well. Do you agree?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think there's a way to do things more efficiently and to kind of increase the throughput of each individual appraiser. I mean, we're going to have no choice kind of based on where the labor pool is going and the fact that the, you know, regulatory restrictions around making an appraiser, it still takes 1 to 2 years to make an appraiser. Volumes are at an all-time low. There's not a lot of people being trained into the industry right now. So technology is kind of the only way forward. I think that that doesn't kind of lower the need for experts in the market, but let's elevate the top 10% of the appraisal community. Let's give them more reports to do because they're, you know, very good at their jobs, and kind of use technology to impact them.
Empower the 20% so they can do their job better. Yeah,
exactly.
I also want you to talk about Glasshouse, right? I say that, but in my brain, I'm like, did I say that right? It's Glasshouse, correct? That's the name of your company?
Yeah.
Okay. So this gets onto our topic of, you know, what's going on in our industry when it comes to, you know, realtor commissions and realtors' roles in these transactions. And, you know, there are companies out there that are looking for ways to, I don't want to say supplant agents, but I would say definitely diminish maybe what their role is in the transaction with technology based. I'm going to actually have somebody on next week that's going to talk a little bit about that. But your company is using technology to help realtors do their job a little bit better. And so I want you to talk a little bit about Glasshouse and what you guys do there, why you decided, you know, to come up to create that company, where the idea came from, and a little bit about what you guys do.
Sure. I might take this back a little bit, just kind of trace my history into the industry to kind of speak to Glasshouse. So I started as a real estate agent. It was my first job ever. I got licensed on my 18th birthday, and I worked full time. Actually took a year off between high school and college to work full time in New York City in the Manhattan market.
Is that where you're from? Are you from New York?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I've always kind of been very interested in the brokerage space. And then I studied it in college. I wrote my thesis, which we'll get into, kind of on the brokerage space, particularly focusing on Manhattan. And then obviously, you know, my career after college, before I launched True Footage, was in real estate finance. And we often dealt with brokers, whether that was kind of office, hotel, industrial, whatever, but right, obviously constantly interacting in the brokerage industry. And one thing that we've noticed over time is just that transparency is incredibly important. And I think that's kind of what is at the heart of this settlement, which we'll get into. But, you know, it used to be when brokers were around in the 1980s, they carried a little black book. They, you know, had listings printed out in the newspaper on paper, and information asymmetry was, you know, a big thing. Certain brokers knew where the listings were. They knew who the sellers were. And if you weren't in the in crowd, you didn't get the news. And being a broker was all about kind of hoarding that data about the market. Well,
it's all about obviously, information.
Yep. Exactly. And obviously, you know, over the last 10, 15 years, brokerages moved online kind of early 2000s. And then you have things like Zillow that come out. I think Zillow was founded, you know, 2009 or something like that. And really the democratization of real estate search was born, and it became a lot easier for any consumer to, you know, search on the internet and find homes. And obviously, yes, SNL spoofed this, but Zillow is basically porn to a lot of, you know, people.
Yeah,
and so I think what's kind of the next generation of this transparency is, okay, brokers, top brokers can still make a big amount of money, right? Whether commissions go from six to three over time, if you're a top agent, you're going to figure out how to win in the new market that exists. And the consumer demands transparency. And so the vision for Glasshouse is, how do we extend that transparency from the search world into kind of the offer world? How do we make sure that all of the offers are very clear? The commissions are communicated clearly to consumers. All the offer terms that are constantly negotiated are clear. Love letters are stopped in favor of actually giving the property to the top person who is bidding the most. And so Glasshouse is really and pricing, that's the last piece. You know, we offer appraisals up front as an option for consumers and for listing agents, so they can kind of show the market, hey, we had a third party, an objective person come in here and show what the properties were. So Glasshouse is kind of this platform for listing agents to sell properties for top dollar and faster, leveraging all these technology tools that focus on transparency, pricing, offer management, and a few other tools to really kind of showcase a listing as best as possible, and then provide additional tools to the listing agent to make the process smoother, faster, make them more likely to get a referral and all those kinds of things.
So it sounds like, I mean, one aspect of that sounds, I don't know, I guess it depends on the agent if it's good or bad, but that's the second part. Let me say this part first. So the idea that if I'm a listing agent, and one of the issues that listing agents run into today is they go sit down with a client to review, their listing agreement on what they think they should list the house for. And because, again, realtors and lenders, we're doing this every day, but the average consumer is living their life, doing their thing, and isn't involved in the real estate market until they're ready to buy or sell. And so what ends up happening is, and this happens to everybody, including realtors, is we always value our houses a little bit more than what the market would, right? Sometimes it's 5%, sometimes it's 50%. But either way, typically speaking, owners are going to think their house is worth more than what it actually is. And so it sounds like there's a tool inside of this that could help for a listing agent to say, hey, look, this isn't my opinion of the value. Look at this tool and what this technology tells us, that based on other properties in the area, this is probably where this house is going to be most suited to sell. And then the idea behind that, and you had mentioned this a little bit in our previous conversation, or in our conversation before we went on, was that, you know, and I experienced, my wife's a realtor, so we experience this on a regular basis. When you list your house at the very top of the market as a seller, right, you're putting it at the very, very top end of the market. Well, unless there's somebody that comes along in the first week that just absolutely loves your house for whatever reason, then that house is typically going to sit a little bit longer. And the problem with the property sitting is that the longer it sits, the less desirable it becomes to a potential buyer, because somebody looks at it and goes, well, why has that house been on the market for 60 days? What's wrong with it, right? Now, more often than not, it's the price. That's what's usually wrong with it, because anything will sell if you give it the right price. So what you're saying is that what Glasshouse can do is assist the listing agent and say, hey, look, I know that you want to list your house here. And you know, they all say, we can, of course, do that. But when we settle in, if we list it here, not only could we possibly get more offers because we're more competitively priced in the market, but you could ensue some sort of a bidding war, even in this market, to where you could maybe get 5 to 10% more than what the actual value would be if you listed appropriately. So is there a tool on your site that actually helps with listing agents in that regard?
Yeah, so much there. I mean, that's foundational to everything that we do and the exact purpose for Glasshouse. So that the kind of phenomenon that you just spoke about is, you know, very visible in the data, right? If you, more than 40% of listings in the country are going through a price cut right now. And then there's another kind of, call it 30 to 35% that are selling up above 97% of the original ask price. And those listings that are not price cut and are selling at 97% above are selling on average within 8 days. And the other box that has the price cuts are selling in 80 days and are going through multiple price cuts. And so literally, if you price your house right in America, because there's just, you know, a dearth of supply in pretty much every market, you will sell your house in 10 days. Yeah. But the example that you used is more often than not what's happening, right? I put so much money into my house. You know, I put in all these special features. I put in a fountain that to me, I think is worth $50,000, but to everyone else is worth nothing. I raised my kids here. It's a special place. Our lot's a little bit nicer than our neighbors. And the appraisal, let us be your boogeyman. We'll come in to the agent. The agent, we'll tell you the house is worth $700,000. There's no contributory value to that fountain. The seller is going to be like, I want to try 750. That seller who ends up trying 750 is going to end up selling their house for 675. If they had just started at 700, they might have sold it for 710. And sometimes that conversation as a realtor is really hard, especially because realtors are naturally incentivized to try to lock things in for 180 days and then price chop because eventually they're going to get paid. But if you're a consumer, you know, that's not the best thing for you because eventually you're going to sell for less. And if you're an agent, telling the truth is probably the best thing for you. Why? Because if you tell the truth and you price right, it's going to sell in 9 days. You're going to get to your commission faster, and you're way more likely to get a referral from that person who had a really pleasant, you know, frictionless experience as compared to the person you had to price chop three times.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's difficult because, you know, agents, you know, especially right now, because deals are so few and far between that nobody wants to, you know, piss off a seller and tell them that their house isn't worth what it's worth because you might lose that deal because you know, there'll be another agent that comes in behind you and will just tell them whatever they want to hear so they can get the listing. Right. And it's not the best deal for the consumer ultimately, but having a third party verification, which is what we all, you know, we talk about all the time in our space when it comes to advertising and marketing for realtors and lenders that, you know, being on social media and being visible in places that you can be seen gives third party validation when someone recommends you as a referral. So if I have a realtor that recommends me as a lender to their client and that client then goes online and looks me up, well, they can see me. I do podcasts. I have videos online. So they know exactly who I am. So it gives third party validation. So what you're saying is that if I'm trying to convince my client as a listing agent that this is going to be the best strategy for selling their home, then I can use Glasshouse's tools to give me third party validation and say, hey, look, it's not just me. Here's the data. Here's how this works. Here's the statistics that'll show you why this is the most effective way to do it. Don't listen to me. Look at the data. Those are the kind of tools that agents need these days, because it's incredibly important that they're able to fully share and communicate their value proposition to their clients and show them why they are the expert, because we are moving most likely into a market to where the days of, you know, you just are neighbors with so-and-so and you just got your real estate license and they're going to call you to buy or sell their home. That's not going to continue. And you have to be a true professional at this business. You have to be, you know, we're moving into like the CPA land where you can file your taxes with TurboTax and you can get the bare minimum of what you need, or you can go to a professional CPA and you can get all the benefits of what that brings. There's a little more cost obviously involved with that, but it can save you a lot more money. It can do you a lot more good in the long term. And that's kind of where this market's shifting. So if you're a realtor, you need to have tools available to you that are going to help you show why you were a professional agent and not just somebody that, you know, sat down for 30 minutes to try to come up with a value for a house and just cross your fingers and hopes it works out.
Totally. And I mean, you know, especially if you're in a bake-off with five other agents, coming to that house and that listing with an appraisal really kind of, you know, shows more credibility and shows that you're taking things seriously. And we can turn any, you know, agent who, even if they're new and they're not so comfortable pricing, we can turn them into someone that looks super experienced because they have all this data available to them. And we're so sure about this process and it working that if you list the property at the pre-appraised value, which, by the way, we offer the appraisal for free up front, so anyone can get one right now. Okay. If you offer that appraisal and you list at that pre-appraised value, if the home doesn't sell within 30 days, we'll pay your seller $5,000 credit.
Wow. Okay. Well, you're really throwing down the gauntlet there, really telling them that you're super confident in your technology. So that's awesome.
I think the other thing also is that, you know, because of our appraisal business, we know who the top appraisers are in every single market. You know, we have a team of exclusive appraisers, but then we also have our software. So we have all of these appraisers that are using our software that don't work at our company, but are just kind of, you know, software users. And we're able to track who the top people are in each market. So we know, you know, if we need to get something priced in Dallas, we know who the top person there is. Obviously, it's going to be a different person in, you know, Fort Worth versus Arlington versus Highland Park. But we can kind of make those decisions and figure that out.
One other aspect that you talked about on that too, which is I'm curious as to how this would work, but the transparency piece, right? I'm all for transparency. I think it's, but to say that transparency hasn't been a big player in our industry over the last few years would be a little bit of an understatement, especially when it comes to multiple offers on a home. Right. And, you know, this happens to everybody. I've experienced it myself on several occasions. You find a house, it's been on the market for 30 days, 60 days, whatever. You're like, we like it. We want to offer, but we're going to offer maybe a little bit less. So we're going to ask for closing costs because it's, you know, been on the market for a minute. And then you put your offer in and then immediately you get a response back that says, we just had a showing yesterday and we're in multiple offers. Now we have two. So give us your highest and best. And everybody, now we want to assume that realtors have their ethics and, you know, there truly is another offer. And I would venture to guess in the vast majority of cases, that is true. But there are probably circumstances, because human beings are human beings, where, you know, you're, as a buyer, you're now having to put maybe extra into something that wasn't there because you have no idea if there's another offer. You don't know. There's no way for you to ever tell. So it sounds like with Glass House that the offers, when they come in, they're there and they're listed and you can see who's offering what. And so is that true? Did I get that right? Or what, how does that process work?
Yeah. So we're kind of piloting multiple scenarios right now, but there's a scenario where you can toggle it basically on and off, where you could say, okay, the property, everything's going to be completely visible and it's up to you to kind of set your strategy. That's what we think is the best in terms of maximizing for the seller, how they're going to get the most money. But obviously it's kind of a different way of thinking about things. Yep. But you know, another part of that is setting a buy it now premium with your seller. So when you list the property, let's say you have the appraisal comes in at 700 and you want to list a buy it now premium at 725. That basically is a button on our technology that says if someone comes in at 725 right now, they can just click it. And within, you know, 24 hours, they can be under contract. Additionally, you can set different features on your platform. So if you're a seller, you can work with your seller's agent and say, hey, I really want to close in June. My kids got to finish school. If someone will do a June 30th closing, that's worth $3,000 to me. Well, now it's really kind of qualitative when there's seven offers coming in that the seller's got to figure out which one is the best. Now we're quantifying each of these attributes. And so it's a kind of new way of thinking about things. This is going to be more important when, you know, a lot of buyers are coming in with different buy side commission agreement. So as a realtor, you got to manage seven different offers. Each of them has a different percentage. You're sitting here thinking like, oh, what's the net proceeds for my seller? And it can be confusing. We provide a digital platform for all of that to be done completely. And so these are some of the things that we're thinking about right now. I think ultimately you're going to see kind of over the next 10 years, more transparency in the offer process, but I don't think every single part of it will be kind of completely transparent overnight.
If you don't mind me asking, how do you guys monetize this? So how does your company earn money in that regard? Are you taking a percentage? Are you taking a flat fee? Are you charging for the listing? Are you not charging till it closes? How do y'all structure that?
Right now we're kind of in launch mode. So we're actually it's at no cost currently.
Okay. There you go.
But our plan eventually is a combination of kind of success fees and subscriptions.
Okay. And then this would be it sounds like at least, because one of the issues, and we'll start getting into this a little bit, is with this NAR settlement that came out, obviously now, from what I understand, I haven't looked today, but it hasn't been officially approved yet. So that's still outstanding and it's supposed to take place in July, but then also throwing a wrench into the situation, which I covered in my most recent market update, was the idea that the Department of Justice has now come back out and reopened the antitrust case against NAR. And part of the reason that they stated, at least from what I read, that they're doing this is one of the assistant attorney generals for the United States said that basically as long as sellers are allowed to offer compensation to buyers' agents, there will be steering. And they kind of look at it as black and white, at least the way that I interpret it. So my interpretation on what the Department of Justice has stated and reason they're opening this up again is because ultimately they want buyers to pay buyer agents and they want sellers to pay seller agents. And that's it. That remains to be seen if that's what's going to happen. But my question is let's factor out the antitrust thing right now with NAR. And let's just say that this settlement gets approved and they have to take the compensation off the MLS and they have to take it out of the listing agreement. And from what I understand, it's also going to be required to not be even mentioned in the listing description. So your platform, because I've heard a lot of agents discuss about, well, if I list the house on my website and it's not on the MLS, then I can put what our offer of compensation to a buyer's agent would be in that scenario, because there's nothing in the language currently that would prohibit that. So let's just say hypothetically, everything plays out like this. Would they be able to list the offer of compensation to a buyer's agent through Glass House and still be compliant with the way you understand it?
Yeah. So I guess let's take a step back there. I do not believe that the DOJ is going to accept the settlement. But if we assume that they did accept the settlement, in the way that I understand it, and our intention is exactly that. Glass House is a compliance tool for real estate agents to protect their reputation, to give cover to their customers. You know, hey, what are you doing about this settlement? And we heard this, and it's a opportunity for sellers and sellers agents to be transparent in the process, to lay out exactly kind of what the concessions are, what the commission. It has to be a concession, not a commission. Exactly what the available concession is for the buy side. And it's up to the buy side to use that concession however they want. If they are using it for a brokerage to pay their broker, the broker has to have that signed prior to the search. So if this property that they end up landing on is paying out 2.5%, but the pre-agreed number with your party that you're working with is 1.5%, the broker can only max out at 1.5%. Right. They're not going to be able to get that 2.5%. And so that's kind of what I understand the settlement to look like today. Okay. And where Glass House comes in is obviously allowing those concessions to be made articulate and clear and consistent from if you're a brokerage and you are protecting yourself from liability, because obviously all these lawsuits are going after the brokerages and not the broker. You can have a subscription-based software that is repeatable, and every single time all of your agents are going to have the same exact way of listing out these concessions, which shows the market that, hey, you're doing something about this issue.
Right. Okay. All right. So then let's get into the meat and potatoes here, which is, all right. So you went to Harvard, which is in and of itself incredibly impressive. Not everybody gets into there, and you graduated from their Harvard Business School. So to say that have a head on your shoulders would be an understatement. So I want you to tell me a little bit about your process through what you did in school, and then why you chose this particular topic to write your thesis on back in 2016, and then your kind of what you wrote about, and then give me an idea of where you think things currently stand today.
Sure. So I kind of mentioned my background already, but kind of been a real estate junkie since I was a little kid, and went into college knowing that I was going to pursue a career in real estate. I wanted to be a developer, but I started working in the development industry after college and just realized it was kind of too slow moving. I was more frenetic. I needed kind of more chaos. And I just, waiting for zoning and things to happen over multiple years and construction plans and architecture plans, as I was going to lose my mind. So when I was in college, I decided that I was going to write my thesis about the real estate brokerage industry in Manhattan. I had worked in there for multiple summers and 15 months between high school and college. So I had experience in the industry, and I just saw every day that I was working, which was, it's an intense market. Obviously it's the most profitable market in the
Did
world.
You run into Trump?
My boss knows him. I don't know. Yeah. My old boss. I thought, okay, there's something here. This is just such a weird industry. There's so many like interpersonal weird, deals happening kind of everywhere. Like somebody's got to write a book about this.
Yes.
And so I did what's called an ethnographic study of the industry. So that was an interview study. So I interviewed kind of like 190 agents, some of the most top performing agents in the country, in the New York market, and just asked them questions about their business, anything from, how do you procure customers? What do you think about this neighborhood? Really kind of just a list of kind of like a free form, not so different from a podcast, a free form question of maybe an hour and a half interview. Yeah. And then I would basically take all that data and then find themes in the paper. One of the major themes was steering. And that was before I even knew what steering was. You would often hear brokers kind of speak in coded language about how they determined where to take a buyer. And they would say, oh, I know this buyer is going to like new construction, or I know this buyer is going to like this building. And it's like, well, why do they like that building? It's like, right. Okay, because certain people live in that building and they're like that person. So there's kind of two elements of steering. There's, you know, what has been written about in fair housing and steering, which is rampant in New York. And there's so much data on that. That's pretty much widely across America. Like that, I can't really put a dent into that literature. But then there was also commission-based steering. You know, certain developers were paying out 5%. All of a sudden their customers liked new construction. Certain listings were paying out only 2% versus 3%. All of a sudden, you know, that was where people were pushing their buyers. And sometimes I don't think it's malicious. It's just kind of capitalistic and even potentially subconscious.
Well, you can rationalize, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but this is something that as human beings, we all do. We can rationalize all kinds of stuff, right? If good information comes our way, that's a benefit to us, right? Whatever that may be. And we are assisting someone else in doing something. If we can find a way inside of that information that is also that we feel like is beneficial to the person that we're trying to assist, then it's a mutually beneficial thing. Whether or not it's completely beneficial to them or, you know, the best route, either way, it's just rationalizing something that you feel like is going to help you out to help someone else. And you're not doing it maliciously. You're just, hey, this works out for both of us. Hey, it's good news, you know?
Yeah. And by the way, most of these buildings and new construction, you know, when I was doing it, it was 2012. I was 19 years old. There were apartments being sold left and right. You'd walk into a new development office and you'd be sitting with a customer and then you'd be going through the, you know, roll call of all the apartments that were available. And then all of a sudden, every 5 minutes, someone was coming in from the marketing team saying, oh, this unit's gone. This unit's gone. It was insane. A lot of these buildings held up in value much more than some of the older kind of old worldy New York buildings. So even if the agent was making more money and it was quote unquote steering, the consumer was also ended up being better off. But anyway, I guess what I noticed was that this was happening. And so it just never really kind of made sense to me. It kind of seemed like a time bomb that eventually someone would look into this because it didn't feel like a lot of the times there were agents, you know, a lot of bad agents out there who didn't really have the back of their customers were really kind of thinking, how do I maximize this deal? Yeah. And so that kind of was my first foray into this. And then obviously I've been tracking the story over the last couple of years. And, you know, you have a lot of people kind of who are talking about, you know, NAR is super powerful, NAR is effective, and they are, they do deliver value, but that doesn't mean that they're not impenetrable.
Right. Yeah. It's been a situation where, you know, I think that, and I've heard this argued by other realtors, right? Where it was kind of a perfect storm situation. And I do think personally, I think that there is some big money interests that are looking and have been looking for years to penetrate into real estate because it's 30% of our national GDP. And there's so much money that comes in and out and transactions that occur that is, you know, the profits that can be made inside of the real estate industry as a whole. And I'm not just talking about buying and selling. I'm talking about all aspects of it have always been an incredibly lucrative business to be involved, which is why I think I don't know the exact number, but I think I read one time it's like 90% of the millionaires in the United States, you know, earned most of their, you know, wealth in real estate. So there certainly has been a big target on us for a long time. And back in the 1970s, if you were a real estate agent and the internet didn't exist, you had to go to an office, you had to pull up all the current listings that came through the fax machine or whatever it is at that point. You had to put all those together. You had to go take them to your clients. You had to go through them and figure out which ones you were going to go see that day. And then you had to go look at maybe 15 or 20 houses on a weekend, drive them around in your car. You decided you were making an offer. You had to call that other agent. You had to drive over there to get them to sign the documents. You had to drive back to your client's house to get them to sign. There's all this back and forth. The amount of time that it took to put a deal together was tremendous because of the lack of technology at that point. But that was just what we did. Whereas fast forward to today, and now the internet exists. People can go online and look at Zillow and they can find or get an email in the MLS, you know, of a property that matches their description, and they can have 20 properties that they can sort through, narrow it down to three and go see those three. And then once they have one that they want to make an offer on, the realtor can type up a few things into a document that's already pre-prepared, send it to them, fill it out. Obviously there's a ton of advice and there's a ton of consultation that goes on with all this. So I don't want to make it sound like, you know, there's not other value here, but just talking about the nuts and bolts of the process. And now that buyer can sign that document. That document can be sent to the seller and the seller's agent. They can sign it online. Nobody has to go anywhere. Nobody has to do anything. And now you've got an executed deal. So And then when you add on top of that, the fact that the median home price in 1982 or whatever it was $70,000, and now it's $412,000, that percentage now carries a much heavier weight. And so when you have people that are, and I've talked to realtors about this too. I've had very few realtors that I can say, when I ask them, when's the last time you had a client that you've worked with in the past, buyer or seller, say anything to you in regards to what was paid to sell their home? Because for the most part, consumers were generally like, this is how it works. I'm okay with it. There wasn't like this big swelling of everybody angry because realtors were making too much money, especially because the average realtor closes one transaction a month. So it wasn't like these people are they're not millionaires. But all of a sudden you get these, you know, phone calls and emails and said, hey, did you know your realtor made this much? And did they do that much for you? And there's kind of this baiting that goes on. And then all these people pile into these class action suits, and then they start popping up all over the country. And this kind of stuff, in my opinion, is coordinated, because you can't just, you know, it wasn't just some angry person. It's like Aaron Brockovich, you know, it wasn't a situation like that where some housewife was mad about something and took over the world. That didn't happen. So when you have these big money interests that are pushing against the industry as a whole, and now trying to find a way of who we're going to villainize, who's going to be the evil person in this transaction. And of course, they pick the realtors, because you can't say it was the Fed for making money too cheap for the last, 5 years when, you know, basically money was free. They're not allowed to say that it's corporate interests that are buying up properties at record paces and turning them into rentals. And you're not going to blame it on the news media for, you know, villainizing these people over the years. So they're going after the realtors. So we're in an environment now where we're moving to a place where things are going to change. They're going to be different. And good or bad, you have to be aware that this stuff is occurring. And so from your point of view, when you look at everything that's occurring and happening in the market, why do you think, you know, just in your opinion, how do you think we got to this point where we're at a place where, you know, our entire industry is being turned upside down in less than a year because of all these lawsuits?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very loaded question. I'll try to kind of pull on some of the threads that I think had to do with this. Obviously asset prices is number one. And if you look at other countries in the world, you know, the average commissions paid out in England, for example, are 1.5%. So 6% is just a lot, especially in a world where many buyers are putting down less than 6%, and there's an affordability crisis in America. And so you have this big number that just seems large, right? And I think that's obviously kind of number one. Number two speaks to kind of the search and discovery. The role of the broker has changed. It's not so much about finding the listings. And that was a huge kind of point of purpose. Number three, the average consumer is just a lot smarter. So, you know, the services provided to the buyer are different now. Most people can see dollar per square foot data. Most people can pull comps themselves. Most people can set up tours themselves. And so there's just a lot more kind of self-service options out there that makes 6% seem scary. And by the way, you've already seen in New York, and I recognize New York is New York, and, you know, outside of maybe LA, there's not really other markets that see pricing like that. Maybe Miami now too, but we've seen commissions come down in the super luxury market to 4% already, just because the commission numbers are just, you know, very high. I think also, you know, unfortunately, and I think a lot of realtors will agree with this, especially the good ones, is a lot of these shows on HGTV and Bravo and everything, you know, they brag about the size of the commissions as if this is like a normal thing that most people are making $500,000 on a deal. That pushed a lot of people into the industry that were like, oh, I can be a realtor too, and I can make a lot of money. And that kind of diluted the quality of the realtor.
Glamorized the lifestyle,
Those bad realtors, you know, created a stigma for the profession that basically, you know, was a negative one. And unfortunately, that, you know, has an impact on the kind of general perception of what a realtor is worth, even though really good realtors, can be worth their value and more. And so I think the last piece as well is most people realize that not all buyers are the same. And so to kind of have a generalized commission structure might not make the most sense, kind of similar to what the appraisal industry is seeing with this continuum of options. If I've bought six houses already and I grew up in the same town where I'm still at, like I know the market, I understand how transactions work. I might not want to pay someone 2.5-3%. But if I'm a first-time home buyer, or if I'm moving to Austin for the first time and I get connected with a realtor who is not just a realtor, but is almost like a tour guide, like, oh, your kids should go to this school or sign them up for this program, or this is the coffee shop you should go to, or this pharmacy is great, or I got a therapist for you, whatever it is, like that broker is delivering a different service in addition to, you know, contracts and negotiations. And so to that buyer, that broker might be worth 3%, 4%, whatever it is. And so what I believe is, if this is not the buy side broker going away, it's a buy side broker evolving. And so those kind of that evolution will mean that just higher quality brokers are going to survive and really kind of take more of the market. So I really think it's actually probably a good thing for a lot of brokers out there.
No, and I actually hear that quite a bit. It's funny when I talk to a group of realtors or brokers, you know, there's a different vibe. But when I talk to an individual realtor or broker, most of them do say that. They do say, yeah, we're not real thrilled about how all this is working out because it's changed, but ultimately we think it's going to be good for the industry because the professionals or the cream of the crop are going to rise, you know, to the occasion. And then all of the part-time folks that just kind of flooded the market over the last 3 years that came into real estate are going to eventually go away. And this is going to be a good thing. And this is, I mean, look, the mortgage industry is a prime example of this because we went through this in 2008 when prior to 2008, you know, if you go watch the Big Short, you see, you know, Steve Carell interviewing the two bros, you know, at the bar talking about giving loans to strippers. Like that was a real thing that occurred and it needed a kind of a slap down in order to change everything. So that way the professional mortgage banks and the professional lenders would, you know, have a lot more requirements on them. So then that way the consumer was protected in a better way. And you don't have guys that are out there taking advantage of the system. And I think that this will probably have a similar result. And like I said, most agents feel like that's a pretty good thing. They don't feel like that's a bad thing. You said something a minute ago, which I kind of agree with, but I want to know why. So you said that you do not expect the Department of Justice to accept the settlement that NAR went into with the Sitzer Burnett case. So tell me a little bit about why you think that is. And then what do you think, you know, obviously you don't know, I don't know, you know, this, we're just going off of what we think, but what's your opinion on where you think some of this might be headed ultimately?
Yeah. I mean, so I think two reasons. Number one is like the clear objective is to eliminate steering. And so if everybody's talking about a workaround, that's not going to eliminate steering. So that's kind of, you know, the obvious thing. The second point is the reaction that realtors have had. I think you've seen a lot of realtors go on LinkedIn and Twitter and podcasts and all these different mediums kind of almost bragging about how they're going to make it work and find alternate ways to keep status quo. Yep. And they're doing themselves a disservice by doing that. Because it's basically kind of like rubbing it in the face of the Department of Justice that, hey, we're going to just ignore you. And I think it would have been better if that was their plan to kind of just stay quiet.
I've actually had several brokers that I've talked to that have said just that. They've basically told her, stop talking about it. Like, it's just, you're not helping yourself by saying you're going to do this and you're going to do that. Just leave it alone. But you know, there's millions of realtors out there and you can't control everybody. So.
Yeah. And I think, you know, people wanted to kind of create a rallying cry that they're going to punch back or something.
Yes.
But I don't think that was doing anybody any services. And so I think those are the two reasons. One is just like the reaction that is going to kind of push someone to take a more aggressive approach. And then the first one is just the objective doesn't appear to have been reached. And so I think they're going to do whatever to make sure the objective is reached. And I think what that means is making it really clear that, hey, if you're working with a buyer, you know, you have to document upfront what your commission is, and that's your commission. It doesn't matter what the sell side is going to pay of it. It has to be upfront documented, and you can't push a certain seller, a certain buyer, therefore, into a specific listing because the seller number is higher.
Right. So do you think what I said earlier about ultimately, because I think the whenever we come to judgments like this, simplicity is always the better route, right? Because the more room you leave for gray area, the more room you leave for interpretation, then the more workarounds come about, right? So my opinion is that if the Department of Justice has its way, which, you know, they are the Department of Justice, so they can typically get what they want, that they will say, if you're a buyer, you have to pay your buyer agent. If you are a seller, you have to pay your seller agent, and there is no ifs, ands, or buts. Sellers cannot pay buyers. They can't pay buyer agents. That's not allowed, period, end of story, no questions asked. That's what it seems like is going to happen. In your opinion, do you think that that's the route, or do you think there's still going to be room in there for a seller to offer comp, or to, I mean, even saying the word offer compensation, they've explicitly said that they would. Do you think there's a world in which a seller can still pay a buyer's agent once all this shakes out?
Yes, I do. I do think okay. So. Number one, I think that what hasn't been discussed, which is kind of important, is if the buy side is expected to come out of pocket for this, you know, obviously that would need to be financeable somehow, because most Americans just don't have 3% of the asset price like rolling around. And then second is this would affect the appraisal process too. Because the asset values would be different, and concessions have a kind of special place in the appraisal process. It's a little technical, but the TLDR of that is that we would need to be thinking about the appraisal process and kind of how this impacts the appraisal. And we don't want more appraisals to come in low, if they shouldn't come in low. So those are kind of two pieces, but ultimately I think that the sell side is going to be able to offer a concession amount. I just don't think that the buy side is going to be able to pick which property they end up selling their buyer on because of that, because they're going to have this prepaid agreement with their buyer.
So you can right now, I mean, the system exists where as a seller, you can offer concessions and that's no problem. The issue comes into play with the concessions is that, you know, it's limited depending on the type of loan. So if you do a VA loan, you have a 4% max. If you do FHA, it's 6%. Conventional varies depending on how much money you're putting down, 3-9%, just depending on, you know, if you're putting down the minimum or 20%. So it's there, but again, this goes back to having buyer's agents be very clear up front, because in right now, if someone's getting concessions, like as a lender, hey, they'll pay your closing costs. This is going to help you keep money out of pocket. Well, now that concession may be going to pay your agent. And that's a whole other conversation that they have to have. I personally don't see a world in which they're going to go back to financing that into the loan, because the problem with that is that that was the whole reason we got to where we were in 2008 and 2009 was because loan values were higher than the appraised values of the property. And therefore, when the market, you know, went in the opposite direction, people were underwater, and the lending industry as a whole does not want to get back to that. So I don't know that there's going to be, and I've heard realtors say, well, we'll just figure out a way to finance it. And I'm like, I mean, maybe I'm up for anything, but just looking at it logically, I don't see a world in which that occurs. Not to mention the fact that you're putting now the onus on the GSEs and HUD to completely change their requirements and their regulations and their underwriting guidelines to allow for that to be financed in. Now, I do think one thing that they have to do, and they have to do quickly, and I don't even know why, I'm not seeing this anywhere other than people like us talking, is the VA has to change their requirements like today. You know, or immediately, because right now veterans they're not allowed. It's one of the non-allowables to pay a realtor commission. And that, I mean, you can't have that in this new world that we're about to step into. So that certainly has to change. And I haven't seen that brought up, but outside of that, I just don't know a place in which where they're going to be able to finance it. And yes, you know, when you're saying, can a seller still pay it? They absolutely could through concessions. But I guess what I'm asking is, do you see a world in which outside of concessions, if they don't raise the max on that? I mean, I could see that too. Maybe FHA says, you know, you can do 9% now for concessions as opposed to 6%. You know, maybe that happens. I'm not really sure. But do you see a world in which there's literally a line item on the closing disclosure that the seller is paying to the buyer agent, you know, broker or anything like that?
I think so. I mean, it's going to be somehow mangled into this concession conversation. And so I agree with you. There's still a lot to figure out. You know, the government is not typically known, especially some of these agencies related to the mortgage world, to move exceptionally fast. And
yes,
I would argue that July 1st is a relatively fast timeline for some of these agencies to get moving. However, we did see COVID, a lot of alternatives quickly made to provide liquidity to the market, which is obviously, you know, the number one objective of these government entities. So it is possible that they can, you know, create more certainty in the next 3 months. But I agree with you. I think it's absolutely essential that we get this certainty, because right now, you know, I think part of the anxiety is just, it feels chaotic. It doesn't feel, I know that some of us have been knowing that this was going to happen for, or at least thinking it was going to happen for 5, 6, 7 years, but yeah, it doesn't feel like there's a plan in some of the areas.
No. And that's the most disconcerting part of this whole thing, is that there is no clear guidance on what's going to happen. There's so many questions, and this couldn't be happening at the worst. I mean, it's like the worst possible time for it to occur. We're in a place where, like you said before, we're in a housing affordability crisis. Housing is so incredibly unaffordable compared. I mean, I saw a chart the other day, again, I think it was like 1982, where the average household income in 1982 was, let's say, you know, $39,000. Again, I don't remember the numbers exactly. And the average home price was like 70. And then today, fast forward to 2024, and the average income, U.S. income, is like $75,000 household income, and the average median home price is $420,000. I mean, it is insane, and it's not sustainable. And part of it, you know, we're not building more houses. You know, we have the lock-in effect taking place, where you have people with 2% and 3% and 4% mortgage rates that are not looking to sell. Builders don't want to over leverage themselves and put too much out in their supply, because cost for them has gone up so much that they're not trying to build homes that they can at least, you know, because they're still beholden to their shareholders. So it's not like we have this glut of supply that's coming. And, oh, by the way, interest rates are up, you know, and going up, because after the inflation data came out and after the job report came out, which I've got all kinds of issues with that and where those numbers actually are. But either way, the headlines show that the economy's great. We're booming and everything's awesome. And so rates keep going up. You know, the 10-year treasury yield is going through the roof. So all of this stuff is occurring. And all the while, we are now threatening additionally the facilitators of the housing industry, which is, again, 30% of our GDP. So how does all this stuff resolve itself? I mean, are we on a good time? Do we think there's going to be some answers in July? Do you think it's going to be kicked down the road and we're just going to keep getting drugged through this world of unknowns?
Well, if everyone uses Glasshouse, it'll be fine.
There you go. Exactly.
I think, you know, clear transparency and a system. I think, you know, I have gone through this on the appraisal side in the last couple of years. There have been some launches, and the GSEs are attempting to, as they should, kind of modernize the appraisal industry. But a lot of the rollouts have been confusing for a lot of stakeholders in the ecosystem. You know, nobody knows who's responsible for each of the tasks that are in the entire manufacturing process. And so adoption has been really hard. So I think the more communicative and clear things can be, with an exact kind of like, this is how, what you need to do. Here are the platforms that we approve to kind of get this done. This is exactly how the commission should be discussed. This is exactly how the concession should be discussed. This is how the VA is going to respond. This is how FHA is going to respond. Like, all of that in one place would be hugely valuable, obviously.
Right. But are they going to do that? It doesn't seem like anybody's steering that ship at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, I was in high school in 2009, so I was not really kind of paying attention as much as I am now. Yeah. So I know that guidance historically has been confusing.
Yeah. Well, they had to in 2009, because the entire economy fell apart and we almost, you know, lost everything. So they had to figure out things quickly. Right now, we're just kind of skirting along without any real changes. One last thing before I let you go, I do want to know, so since you exist in this space a little bit, what are you aware of, any other, you know, technology platforms or any other, you know, new ideas on how to transact real estate that are coming to market that you've seen that you think are interesting or have any kind of merit to it? Obviously, you know, not any direct competitors with Glasshouse and True Footage, but have you seen anything out there because you're in the technology and real estate space that you think is promising?
Yeah, I mean, there are a bunch of other companies, you know, Clear Capital's and Class Valuation are other companies in my space that are trying to modernize. There are a few kind of like early entry startups that are trying to build technology platforms as well. NewZip is another one that I know of. So there's definitely kind of a lot of innovation happening in the space. And then a lot of the lenders are investing big money in, you know, innovation, AI, all these categories. Rocket and UWM are spending, you know, millions of dollars a year kind of in this space. So I think it's, you know, both the incumbents and kind of, you know, very early stage companies that are all trying to move the industry forward.
Well, I really appreciate you hopping on with us, John. I know, you know, this is obviously a hot topic for everybody around the industry these days. And the uncertainty is the worst part of it is nobody knows what's going to happen. And we can sit here and speculate all day long as to what could happen and how this could play out. But until we get some real direction, we're all just kind of, you know, shooting into the wind. Nobody really knows what's going on. But before we go, what would you tell a realtor that is existing right now in trying to find how to navigate, you know, this change with a little bit of uncertainty? You know, what do you feel like is the most important thing that they need to be focusing on right now to make sure that they make it through onto the other side of this?
I think the best piece of advice would just be to embrace the future versus trying to basically pretend like it's not going to happen. Like this is the new world. Commissions might go down, but if you prepare yourself, if you kind of tool yourself with technology and different opportunities to make yourself more of an expert in your neighborhood, in your market, you're going to win. And a lot of people are going to be tired. We're seeing in the appraisal industry right now, a lot of people have left the industry. There's just not a lot of work, but there's some people that are doing really well. And so I think there's realtors that can kind of experience the same if they buckle down and you know, learn about what's going on around them.
Yeah, it is. Change is never fun, and it always breeds opportunity. And knowing where the opportunity is the most important part, because the more information that you take in, the more awareness you are of platforms that are coming on board that can help you do your job better, the better you're going to be equipped to move forward. Because as you know, and I don't think anybody can argue, real estate is going to continue to be bought and sold. It's not, the industry is not going away, and it may shift. It may change. There may be some small adjustments into how transactions are handled, but it's not going away. It's in a slow period right now. And it's, you know, we went from the greatest real estate market in the history of the country to one of the worst in less than 24 months. And that is a big shock to the system for a lot of people in the industry. But, you know, when you have a big time when you have a time of big opportunity and big money coming through, there's a lot of bad actors that get into the business. And this is kind of a culling of that to kind of minimize. It's just a matter of survival at this point and making sure that you can still provide for your family. But there will be opportunity on the other side of this. And while the market is slow and while things are kind of changing and adjusting, this is the time. It's so important right now to really sit down and look at your business, evaluate it, come put together your value proposition, find out where your strengths are in the market and highlight those to your past clients. Make sure you have a strong database of people that you reach out to and provide content, educational on the process of buying a home, why it's so important to carry an agent and have an agent, and all the tools like Glasshouse that you can use to help your buyers and sellers be able to make sure that what they're paying you and the compensation that you are getting, you are absolutely earning, if not more than that. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, because if it was, everybody would do it. This is going to be something that's a bit of a challenge. And if you haven't done it before, it's going to be a new thing. But if you do it well and you really put your nose to the grindstone and work, you will come out the other side, because there will be a lot of very successful, very professional realtors that continue to thrive in their individual markets. And it's just a matter of, you know, if you're going to be that one, or if you're going to be working in insurance next year or something. I don't know, even though that industry is not doing so hot either right now. They're incredibly expensive. Yeah. Well, John, again, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for hopping on with me and going through all this. I know that it's, you know, it's like I said, it's not a fun topic to talk about all the time, because, you know, what you guys have done with Glasshouse and True Footage has been great, because the technology pieces are incredibly important to be adding to what your repertoire of tools that you have as a realtor. And I thank you for all the work that you did with us and then sitting here with us for an hour to talk about it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. Thanks for everybody that stuck around to the end. I will be back on Tuesday next week with another market update. We'll still stay heavy into the SNAR stuff, kind of keeping you up to date with any developments that are occurring. There's all kinds of lawsuits now that are being filed against mortgage companies too. Talk a little bit about that. So nobody's immune from it these days. We are lawsuit heavy. And next week, I will be welcoming a CEO of a company that is actually going to be working against you as an agent to some extent, not fully, but a little bit. So, you know, again, this is opportunities and threats type of thing. So you got to tune in and find out what they're looking to do, because companies are coming into our space and you got to be aware of what they're doing. So everybody have a great weekend, and I will see you next week.